This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
So we have a box office top 10. At number 10, Horton Hears a Who. Still in there, yeah. which is doing fantastically well.
It is. You know, I wasn't a huge fan, but funnily enough, I took my son to see it and a friend of his the other day, and they laughed all the way through it. And, I mean, my problem is that I think that in
the kangaroo is Hillary Clinton.
Is it?
Yeah, well, that's the way it came over to me.
Why?
You need to go and see it again.
I've seen it twice. I want to do a third time. That's really stretching. Why? Because she's bossy.
Just sounds like it. Just reminded me of. I just thought it was intended to be.
I see. Okay, fine. I mean, my problem is that I think in the end that stuff is linguistic rather than visual, and what the film is a lot of visual stuff rather than the linguistic stuff. I don't think it's anything like as funny as the source. But from just a simple test driving, took kids, looked at it, they laughed. So, and clearly it's done all right.
Happy-go-lucky is it?
Yeah, you see,
nine?
Well, we had this debate with Mike Lee, and Mike Lee said, on air, and he said to me, what I want to know is, did you love Poppy? And I said, no, I found her quite annoying. He said, yes, but did you come to love her? And I went, well, I came to find that she was right, but I still found her profoundly annoying. And
she was annoying while being charming.
Well, I don't think she's charming. I think that what she is her character is right, her optimism is right, she's intelligent, smart, the rest of it. I just find the fizzing bonhomie really, really, because I'm a grumpy old git. But you were the same? Go on. You felt the same way.
No, absolutely, until you see her as the teacher, and then I thought, actually, you are inherently good at what you do, therefore I can take the other stuff.
But that's it, right? I would say there's a similarity there between that and the Chuckle Brothers. I think the Chuckle Brothers do what they do really well.
Loads of people, by the way, are saying you're wrong. The Chuckle Brothers are brothers.
Well, that's a great urban myth, because I was told convincingly...
The Chuckle Brothers, Barry, born 24th December 1944, Paul, born the 18th of October 1947. They're from Rotherham, real-life brothers, and the youngest in a showbiz family of eight, says Steve in Burnham.
Okay, well, in that case, I stand corrected. It's a shame, though, isn't it?
It wasn't much of a theory, was it? One text.
It was not a theory. I was told.
Oh, do you know what? I was wrong.
What? Yes. Well, look, it just shows that I can climb down if necessary. Did you know the Crankies are brothers?
Was that a U-turn? So we've done Happy Go Lucky. 27 Dresses must be the worst title of a movie ever. Anyway, it's at number 8.
It's very, middle of the road. It makes even the Devil Wears Prada look edgy and more complex than it is. It's very, very sort of meringue-y and not great.
Step Up 2, The Streets.
Which is pretty much the same as Step Up 1, The Streets, to me. But, the dancing is what it's all there for. And I have to say, I have a tin ear for that kind of music. So
The Spiderwick Chronicles at 6.
Really liked it. Really, really enjoyed it. And again, took the kids to see it, and they enjoyed it too. It is scary when it needs to be. What?
I really enjoyed the first 20 minutes, and then my 8-year-old, just to underline the point, decided it was too scary for him, so I had to leave.
Okay, fine.
And so we walked around Norwich for about an hour and a half, waiting for the others to come out, and thinking,
What did they think when they came
good.
Out?
They thought it was good, but I just wanted to stay in because I thought it was terrific.
Yeah? I mean, I really liked it. I thought it was... I thought the story was well told, and I liked the acting, and I thought it was well directed, and it was... it's a Hammer horror movie for kids.
We have Son of Rambo at 5.
Loved it. Think it's really terrific. I mean, there are funny little things that are wrong with it, but that's part of its charm. I think it's much, much better than The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which I think Garth Jennings made a bit of a horlicks of. It's, it's sweet, and it's a kid's film, but it's not for kids. It's basically for adults, although I think it has a fairly wide audience. I think it must be a 12 certificate. It's certainly not for very young kids, because there is a certain amount of adult content in it, but I really enjoyed it. It was lovely to see a British film that, had a good idea and followed it through, in comparison with some other British films out this week.
Which we will be getting to with a sense of menace. Mark, on this, last week my girlfriend and I were considering a film to fill a vacant Friday evening. I suggested that The Good Doctor's advice had yet to fail me, and that Son of Rambo was a film worthy of our £7 and valuable time. The next day, however, while gossiping around the water cooler at work, the question of my evening's entertainment was raised. The news of my cinematic plan raised much hilarity. Have you seen the film's title? Have you seen the adverts? It looks rubbish. Send it to the pub with us, they cried. I was concerned and worried. I considered the film's title, the adverts on the sides of buses, and weighed the traumatic consequences of taking my girlfriend to a terrible film against the doctor's advice. Thankfully, my faith in the doctor held true.
Oh, good.
The film was self-indulgent and went on a bit long, but there were many genuinely funny moments and enough quirky charisma to pull it through. So I'd like to thank him for giving us the confidence to overcome the stigma of an appalling title and dodgy choice of advertising. consider it done. That's at 5:04. Street Kings, you haven't seen it.
Haven't seen. Have we got a review?
Stu was first on saying, Keanu Reeves is a tough guy, LA cop. Utter nonsense. Will that do?
Can you say Keanu Reeves in a funny way?
Probably.
Keanu.
But why would I do that?
Because it's one of those names that you have to do that to. Keanu.
Not really.
Gerard Depardieu and Keanu.
That works. In Bruges at number 3.
Which I liked with reservations. I mean, I think Martin McDonagh is a very, very good writer. I think it's certainly the best thing Colin Farrell's done for a very long time. It is scabrous and blackly comic, sometimes just for the sake of it, sometimes for sort of moderately philosophical ends. It's funny. There are some laugh-out-loud funny things in it because it's so politically incorrect. I don't think it has quite the kind of polished perfection of something like Six Shooter, which is a short film, and I think in the end is, you know, perhaps a better work. But it is worthy of attention, even though there are things in it which look like they're just there just for shock and awe.
Oh, and this in from Marcus, Street Kings. Keanu Reeves being extremely dense and manipulated by everyone, not least the script that leaves a not dead body in his car boot at the end with no possible way of explaining it. Hugh Laurie as House the Cop doesn't work, etc., etc. Give it a miss.
Keanu.
Not funny the first time. Number funnier. 2 is Fool's Gold. You haven't seen
that.
But this from Matt Wolford in Oxford. Fool's Gold, short review. I have spent more time writing this text than the writers did on the script. Shocking from start to finish. I suspect that's going to be about as good as it's going to get. Anyway, the UK's number one movie is 21.
Which, you know...
How are you spelling that?
I'm spelling it Wish, W-S-H-W, like that. It's one of those... The people who made it said, oh, like, we're making this for the money, and, you know, Kevin Spacey said, I'm doing it for the money, and I'm just going to win. It's a big hit, and it's one of those, you know, gambling, it's all to do with adding up, and it's sexy and swish, and it's completely vacuous, and it's in one ear and out the other, and it's absolute throwaway popcorn fodder and fairly unremarkable. And if you saw it in an aeroplane, you might feel all right about it. But, you know, it's taken a load of money because it is, as is the manner of these things, a popcorn movie. It's not a bad popcorn movie. It's just not a particularly good one.
On the other side of Street Kings, Kirsty would just like it said that Keanu Reeves resembles resembles a coat hanger less than usual and also has some interesting facial hair from Jay Mohr and the bloke that played Aiden in Sex and the City.
Jay Mohr?
M-O-H-R from Jerry Maguire. Enjoyable tosh. Is the opinion of Kirsty. Anyway, okay. That's enough of the top 10 because there's some new stuff out, some of which might be quite intriguing. Well, what do we go with first of all?
On the subject of enjoyable tosh, you'd think that deception would be the thing to provide the enjoyable tosh because, you know, the poster looks like the poster for Intersection. I'll hold that up for you, well, for the webcam if you can. That's, you know, that looks like the poster for Intersection, right? And the trailer looks like Fatal Attraction, although the reviews kind of read rather more like that Jennifer Aniston thing, Derailed. And it's basically yet another straight-to-video erotic thriller that just happens to be up there on the big screen because it's got some stars in it. And the story is Ewan McGregor doing his American accent. I like Ewan McGregor. I do think he's a good, talented, rounded actor, but occasionally he does do some clunkers. Anyway, he plays a schlubby accountant, and he's schlubbily accounting in this company when in comes Hugh Jackman, and Hugh Jackman's a sexy exec wearing a $4,000 jacket, and they sit down and they enjoy a puff together. And Ewan really...
Explain?
A puff on a cigarette of herbal concoction.
All right, okay.
Thank you for bringing attention to that. I was just a plot point that I was just passing over, what with it being the time of day that it is. They bond, and Hugh Jackman says, you know, hey, you've got to get out and, you know, discover stuff about the world. Everything's great. And then they swap. They've got mobile phones that are almost exactly the same, and they accidentally swap their mobile phones.
Do
they do. But is it an accident? Then Hugh Jackman goes off somewhere, and Ewan McGregor answers the mobile phone, and someone says, are you free tonight? And it's a woman's voice rather than...
Do your impressions not stretched anything vaguely?
Are you free tonight?
That's better.
And, well, here, listen and see what happens.
Hello?
Are you free tonight?
Actually, I am, but this isn't Wyatt.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Well, I am free, but,
Could you be at the Dylan in 1 hour?
Yeah, I guess so, but...
Are you waiting for me?
Yes, I think so. Would you like a drink or something?
Oh, no, thanks. I've got a conference call with Tokyo early in the morning.
Oh.
Shall we go?
Yes. Look, the person who you thought you were talking to isn't me.
You're not who I spoke to on the phone?
No. Yeah, yes, I am. I came here, but I don't.
You don't?
Not too sure what's going on.
oh, but he is very sure what's going on very soon. Because then there's a montage of softcore Rumpy. And this pretty much tells us where we are with the film. See, here's the thing. He's picked up a phone. He's got into this club, which is basically hot executives just anonymously enjoying themselves in their time off because of their business constraints, you know? But, obviously, inevitably, there's blood, there's blackmail, there's deception, there's the suitcase full of money, and there's a whole bunch of twisting and double-crossing. Now, if, like me, during the 1980s, you were watching straight-to-video Shannon Wherry movies, you go, yeah, I know.
No, I wasn't, actually.
You say you weren't. You say, I've seen this. Tanya Roberts did
that
film.
Not only do I say I wasn't, I wasn't.
Delia Shepherd was in that movie before. I remember when Greg Dark directed it, only Greg Dark directed it with rather more style than the guy who's directing it now. I remember that when it turned up as a straight-to-video 1980s erotic thriller, it didn't have clunky Basil exposition plot moments in which people said things on mobile phones like, hello, I'm the janitor and I will be coming to your apartment at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, completely irrelevant. You remember that bit in Wayne's World when he says, it may be Wayne's World too, when they say to Chris Farley, do you know where Mr. Big is? And Chris Farley suddenly gives him all this. Yeah, he's sitting in this part of the car and there's a satellite there, and then he turns to the camera and says, do you think any of that information will be useful later on? And this is one of those flags up in the air. Here is a plot point, ahoy. And if you can't see the twists coming, like the QE2 docking in Southampton, honk, honk, you know, fine, then you're really, really not trying. The other difference is that when this film was made as several straight-to-video erotic thrillers, it had a better ending. This movie's got at least 6 endings, and none of them are any good, and I pretty much guarantee you that when it comes to the DVD, there'll be another 5, but none of them will be the ending that it would have had on straight-to-video DVD, in which Shannon Wherry would have run off with Delia Shepherd, and they would have got all the cash, and the men would have been left behind looking like fools. I mean, it's not a terrible film, it's just immensely silly, and yet it has that kind of, you know, it's trying to be adult, hey, it's about grown-up games, it's about the games that grown-ups play when they're too busy.
And you know, what are those games that people...
Well, apparently they involve meeting Charlotte Rampling in a hotel. And that's the other thing. The trump card of the movie is, right, you know, hey, look, you just think this is a bit of sleazy, erotic thriller trash, but we've got Charlotte Rampled. Yeah, well, fine. Well, two things. Firstly, Miss Rampling, not only was she in The Night Porter and everything, but she was in Basic Instinct 2 the last time I looked. And she had a better line in Basic Instinct 2 than she has anywhere in this. There's a great bit in Basic Instinct 2 when Sharon Stone walks out and Charlotte Rampling, who I think is playing a psychiatrist. Everyone's always a psychiatrist or a high-flying accountant.
Dave Morris is in that. And
He is, isn't he? He is in that, yeah.
No, but he's the psychiatrist, isn't he?
Well, Charlotte Rampling in that case is a therapist or something, but she says, oh, she left early. How Lacanian of her. Which was just fantastic.
How what?
Lacanian, no, as in Lacan, you know, Lacanian. Oh,
what
blimey.
What does that mean?
Okay, I invite your texts on what Lacanian
is. Isn't that terrible? There's a line in Basic Instinct 2 that I don't
understand. You see, that's the thing. When you said Basic Instinct 2 wasn't any good, it was because it was flying so
far. It was straight over my head.
Meanwhile,
it was full of dialogue I got confused by.
Somewhere down at ground level is deception looking up at the arch wit of Basic Instinct 2 and thinking, if only we could aspire to those giddy heights. That basically, when people say sleaze cinema plays to dimwits, well, some of it does, but some of it doesn't. I mean, Basic Instinct 2 is a movie that's clearly written by... Well, it's written by Henry Bean and Leora Barish, who are, you know, clever people. It's a smart...
If you say so.
It's a smarter movie than people gave it credit for. Much smarter movie. This, on the other
hand... We should say hello to Dave Morrissey, by the way, who next time I see him, I will ask him. First of all, are you going to be Doctor Who? Secondly, what does Lacanian mean?
On the subject of the hellos, hello to Jason Isaacs.
Yes, hello, Jason.
And you have to give a pause. And I have to say hello to the Subways, the modern popular singing group.
The Subway Sect?
No, not Subway Sect. You did this before, not Subway Sect. Even I know who Subway Sect are. The Subways, a modern popular singing group. And I played a modern popular singing gig with them the other day, and they were really lovely. Anyway, hello the Subways.
On that basis, hello to the man in John Lewis who complained that we weren't on often enough.
Yes, and who are we not doing? All the members of...
Pentangle and Focus.
Focus, right, fine. There was somebody else.
David Bowie, Michael Caine.
When did David Bowie come in?
David Bowie.
Have you finished this review or not? Yeah, you knew it. Well, I've said what has to be said. Basic Instinct 2 is funnier and smarter, and has got, you know, all the Shannon.
What else could you describe?
All the Shannon Wherry movies has got. What else could you describe as Lacanian? Most of the works of, you know.
Of who?
Of Lacan. I mean, him, the person after whom he is. It is named.
Lacano.
This is like saying, what's Freudian?
I'm just going to
step away from this because actually this is the point at which the intellectual barrier has been lowered so far.
Right.
Okay, it's very silly. And anyway, I don't think the audience of Deception are going to be worrying about it.
Can you explain what it means?
No, I can't explain what it means in ways that... Because it's like saying, what does Freudian mean? Or it's like saying, you know, what does Dostoevsky mean? It's just a joke.
I don't want to continue until I know what it means. I want it explained. Lacanian.
Well, I think that what she means in the context of her leaving early is that what she is doing is she is fulfilling an unexpressed, an unverbalised desire of her subconscious.
Why didn't you just say that? Would have been a lot more straightforward.
Because that's not a funny line. But Lacanian of her is.
Liz on this says, looking forward to the doctor's return. We have missed you. I need some advice. As a mother of two young children, I haven't been out for a very, very long time. However, my lovely partner has offered to babysit next week so I can go to the cinema for the first time. Would you recommend, and these are the choices, either Happy-Go-Lucky or Son of Rambo?
Son of Rambo.
Because?
It's funnier.
Is it Lacanian in any way?
No.
Why?
Because it isn't.
Nicely argued. I think the thing for people to be staying put for, apart from everything, is Three and Out, because I think that's first coming up.
Okay.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is it something to Is it a joy to behold?
No.
Your review.
You ever read Foucault's Pendulum?
Not in the last couple of weeks.
All right, okay.
Would you like to summarise?
No, I wouldn't. Right, let me read this to you, because when you said to me, you know, explain to me why what she did was Lacanian, I said, well, I think what it meant in the context was that she was doing something that was as a result of an unexpressed desire that was not verbalised, and I said that I think the character who said it must therefore be a psychoanalyst, right? From that most reliable of sources, the Wikipedia.
Oh, always
Jacques
right.
Lacan.
Are they the people that wouldn't let us have our Wittertainment entry?
Lacan's désir follows Freud's concept of Wunsch and is central to Lacanian theories, for the aim of the talking cure, psychoanalysis, is precisely to lead the analysand to uncover the truths about their desire, but this is only possible if that desire is articulated or spoken. I think that would be 10 points to me and brickbats to you, and I've printed out the whole thing so that you can read it and discover that Jacques Lacan was.
I'll swap that for Vivian Westwood's manifesto.
Yes, OK, fine, give it here.
Which would you rather have?
I'd rather have Vivian Westwood's manifesto.
OK, all right. Okay.
I had that Dostoevsky in the back of a cab once.
Matt in Southampton.
That Jean-Paul Sartre, he was so stupid he didn't know he existed.
He was notorious for kicking people out of therapy sessions early. He was Dali's analyst. And I quite like this.
In that case, that may be another explanation of the joke, if he was notorious for kicking people out of the sessions early. The joke in that case is not as clever as perhaps we thought it might have been.
This text says, Mark explained Lacanian to Simon when Basic Instinct 2 first came out. Which is almost certainly right. This says Lacanian is of, like, or pertaining to...
To Lacan.
No, Lord Lucan.
Very good, OK. Boom.
Craig says, I know what Lacanian means, but Dr. Kermode, having an English degree, well, not really, should know to say none of them is and not none of them are.
Ah. What did I say? None of them is. Mm-hmm. And none of them is...
None of them is. That's what you said, and then you had something else.
Okay. So I should have used fewer words rather than less.
No.
Yes! Fewer words rather than less.
That'll do.
Thank you.
So let's move on, because a very, very exciting moment coming up now. Mackenzie Crook, very good in The Office. Now, people may well have seen him advertising this film, and he does an interesting interview. He was also in Sex, Lies with the Potato Men.
Which
was sort of universally not that popular.
And I'm starting to wonder whether, in fact, Mackenzie Crook is becoming the sort of the mark of the Black Death when it comes to movies. I'm just trying to find his bio for other movies that he's been in, because he was, as you rightly say, in Sex, Lives of the Potato Men. Was he in anything else that was of any note whatsoever? He was in The Brothers Grimm, which was Terry Gilliam's worst movie. He was in The Merchant of Venice, which wasn't very good.
Don't spoil it for Three and Out, because we're really not sure which way this is heading.
Okay, so, and he's in Pirates of the Caribbean, which, as we all know, is just hideous. And so the story is, you must have followed this in the paper, he plays a tube driver and two people fall under his train. And then he's told that if a third person falls under his train within a month, he'll get a bonus payoff. Let's hear a clip.
Paul, what are we going to do with you?
Second in a month? It's becoming a habit.
Was on my fault.
Don't say that.
He was dead before I hit him. I tried to stop.
Oh, of course you did. Come on, it's just a bit of bad luck, that's all.
Yeah, but the psychological effect is still the same, though, isn't it? It all counts in the big game.
Shh. What big game?
The one nobody talks about.
So why are we talking about it?
because we care about you, Paulie.
Three is the magic number. The rule, man, the rule.
What rule?
Three and out. You hit three people in a month, they pay you off. They retire you because they reckon that you can't deal with it up top. Three is the charm. It's three and out.
You know how it's possible to look at a poster and know whether you're going to like a film or not, or to watch a trail and know whether you're going to like it or not. Sometimes it's possible to listen to one of the brief clips that you bring us on a Friday afternoon and know what we're going to like or not.
There was, I think, the train, which is the train drivers' union that had that officially picketed the opening, whichever they were. Anyway, they said, "Oh, it's not funny. There's nothing funny about."
Who's Aslev?
Is it fine? They said, "There's nothing funny about people falling under trains." You know what? There isn't, and the movie doesn't suggest for 1 minute there is, because there's nothing funny about the film at all. What happens, however, is after the first 10 minutes of it just being a very badly made, you know, it's the kind of standard issue: grim British comedy, ugly, you know, scenery, badly written, badly put together. A scene in which somebody has to go to the toilet. A scene in which somebody has to find something in, you know, poop. Scene in which somebody jumps out of a window without their trousers on. You know, this bad sex, the usual stuff. Okay, just the usual kind of line of offences that make British comedy just about as much fun as having a root canal done. But then he has to find somebody else to fall under the train. So he finds Colm Meaney, who's this kind of blarney-filled Irish guy, and he says, "Look, if you'll fall under my train on Monday, I'll give you some money in advance." So then he says, "Okay, well, we can go and meet my family because I can kind of make up with them." And then the whole film goes off into this kind of mawkishly sentimental thing in which he goes to meet his estranged wife, who's played by Imelda Staunton. And Imelda Staunton basically isn't having any of this. The minute Imelda Staunton walks on screen, it's just like, I don't care what film you're making, I'm Vera Drake, me, and I'm not messing with it. And Imelda Staunton does the Imelda Staunton performance. And we then get through this absolutely just toe-pullingly terrible, mawkish, sentimental thing about this bloke and his wife, and then the Mackenzie Crook character, and he's going to get off with the bloke's daughter, and then they're all going to find their life reaffirmed, and then at some point somebody's going to fall over in cow poo, and there's going to be more running around with their trousers on, and then we know at the end they're going to have to go back to all that stuff back down in London. And you're sitting there and you're watching it, think okay, it's bad, it's just bad. I mean, it's just grim bad, you know, but it's not Sex Lives of the Potato Men bad, it's just grim bad off. And then you start thinking, actually, the mawkish sentimentality is worse than the really clumsy, badly executed humour, because the mawkish sentimentality is so vomit inducingly poor that actually I'd almost rather be back with the really terrible ketchup on the lines gags that we had at the beginning of the movie. And the people who are picketing it, picketing for all the wrong reasons. I mean, they're saying that we shouldn't be making fun of this stuff, and it's no fun. I mean, it's not. It's just really, really badly, grimly done. And then we get to as it sort of starts to sort of channel towards the ending, and I'm getting kind of mild cramps, but nothing really bad. Just sort of, you know, pains in my legs, and just feeling generally like my flesh was putrefying and rotting.
But apart from that, no,
the general meltdown that you get in those kind of British comedies in which you think, obviously, jail sentences for all involved, why is it being released at all? Where have they found quotes for the poster? I mean, amazingly, quotes for the poster written in tiny little things that you can't
see. From tiny little free newspapers,
no,
by and large.
I loved it, Dick Smeechley from Ling-a-Ling, and somebody else saying, it's actually not as bad as I thought it might have been, Diddly Bongy from the Diddlebombie. And, but, you know, and then... And then we get to the end. And the end attempts to be, is it valedictory? And it ends with...
not Lacanian.
It ends with You Got a Friend. Now, I say this...
You've Got a Friend, Carole King or James Taylor?
No, You Got a Friend apparently being done by somebody like Boyzone or somebody horrible. So, you know, it's all rocky, you know.
Something to stay in for, then.
And there's, you know, I think what you're meant to do is you're meant to leave on a wave of goodwill. You know, hey, we went in, it's a comedy about death, but we come out feeling life-affirmed. And it was that kind of swimming out in the tidal wave of spew. That as people were coming out of the screening, I mean, people were staggering out of the screening, and I mean, literally, I mean, not being funny, not metaphorically staggering, like staggering like somebody had just hit them, going, oh, you know, is the situation really this bad? Are we really now at the point that this is what passes for, you know, a feisty, sparky little British comedy? I mean, it's just so clearly that what you need to do is take all the negatives and bury them in a hole and prevent anybody from being involved in it ever from getting anywhere near your cinema again, and take everybody whose name is on the poster and put them in a pen and, you know, take the
posters
themselves.
Should everyone involved be thoroughly ashamed
down
of themselves?
Well, thoroughly ashamed doesn't really cover it. But the one thing I would say about it is this. I think Mackenzie Crook's got a big problem getting over a movie as bad, but it isn't as bad as Sex Lives of the Potato Men, in as much as, although it's just awful, I mean, it is just awful, that's all it is.
All right.
It's just
so is he on the up,
awful.
Then?
Well, I think he is in that he's gone
up being a relative.
Apparently, he was brilliant in The Office, so it kind of it's his fault. It's just awful, but it is just awful.
Just awful, then.
But just awful, with the emphasis on the just, as opposed to the just awful.
So should he actually be feeling quite encouraged, then, Mackenzie, if he's listening, based on what you said about Sex, Lies, and Potato Man?
Yeah, that's right.
Just
he's
awful.
Gone to just awful.
Okay, that's fine. Thanks, cleared that up. Paul in Cheltenham. Watched Street Kings last night. Can't review it in one word, but I can tell you that the back wall of my local cinema has 8,024 bricks. Which
good.
Is
very good.
But all you need to know. Alan from Truro. Chuckle Brothers are brothers, not father and son, as we
yes, as we've accepted. On
by the way, I saw 21 last week. I'd rather watch the Chuckle Brothers any day of the week. A call for a new
to
expression.
Make to you.
Lacanian. We've just briefly touched on. Joe in Leeds. Whenever a person in our lives accurately critiques the arts in a gloriously lengthy rant, someone should utter, "Oh, how commodian." Ironically, Mark is the only one who does this, and so when "how commodian" is said to Mark, he can go on another angry rant, and that'll be followed by another person saying "how commodian," and the loop will continue.
Forever and ever.
Until the end of time. Lots of Jesse James correspondence.
Saying good.
Well, you'll have to wait, because we'll try and squeeze it in all before right. 4 o'clock, because we need to do The Eye and Sarah Marshall, maybe. We'll try and do at least those.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall. According to James, I'm on the poster king. Brilliantly, outrageously painful. He is. The word tart, honestly, if you look it up in the dictionary, there is a picture of James beaming there with, you know, "let me put my name on your poster." Now, look, I love James, but the child has to be spoken to very strongly about using phrases like "brilliantly, outrageously, painfully funny" about movies like Forgetting Sarah Marshall. It's the latest from the Judd Apatow. I want him to make a movie with Keanu.
Gerard Depardieu.
Gerard Depardieu. And so the story, I mean, you know, all the Judd Apatow movies, basically schlubby bloke, montage of schlubby bloke, couch, eating cereal, bloody bloody blah, going out with unfeasibly glamorous woman, some romantic thing happens in which schlubby bloke is caused to suffer by unfeasibly glamorous woman, and that's pretty much what happens here. We have schlubby bloke, he's sitting on the sofa, eating the thing, unfeasibly glamorous woman.
Is he reading the Biddly Bong Daily?
He is reading the Biddly Bong Daily and flicking the channel on the diddly dong ding dang blah, blah, blah. And then his girlfriend comes in and says, "You know, I'm dropping you, but you know this because you've seen in the trailer." And then he decides to go on Hawaii to forget her, but she's there too. But you know this because it's in the trailer. And then he discovers that while he's out in Hawaii, she's there on holiday with Russell Brand. But you know that too because that's in the trailer. Here's a clip, which is probably something that's in the trailer.
We have a very special guest with us here today. He is the lead singer of the band Infant Sorrow, one of my favorite musicians of all time. He's so awesome. Ah! Please, let's see if we can get him up here. Mr. Alvis Snow, please. Come on. Share your gift.
Duty calls and all that. I'm trying to be incognito. It's weird. It's like work to me. This is no fun. Thank you. What a lovely introduction. What an eccentric and confident young man. I'd like to dedicate this song to a very beautiful woman that's here today. It's Miss Sarah Marshall. There she is. Look at her, blimey. Oh, there's ancient skies. I've had these wandering eyes. But you took me by surprise when you let me inside.
That's enough. But that's the trailer, right? That scene's in the trailer, right? And then he has to get an apartment, which is next to there, and that scene's in the trailer as well. And so here's the thing. Right? All the jokes are in the trailer. So if you've seen the trailer, you've done all the laughing that there is to be done. The plot's in the trailer as well, and the fact that Russell Brand's in it is in the trailer. Now, Russell Brand's in the St. Trinians movie, terrible. This is much less terrible than that, and Russell Brand in this plays Russell Brand, and he plays him quite well, and he's probably the best thing in the movie, because he just does the Russell Brand thing, you know, and it's fine. I mean, he appears to actually have written half of his lines, because I don't believe that an American scriptwriter wrote that line about, you know, what a confident and upsetting man. I mean, it's clearly that's Russell Brand just improvising. And it goes along, schlubby bloke, glamorous woman, schlubby bloke, lots of glamorous women all fall in love with him, because he's schlubby and dorky, and everyone loves a schlubby, dorky bloke, and then there's a thing at the end, and then the film stops. And it is two things. Firstly, it is proof that I was right when I said, you know, this knocked up business, you're all getting the wrong end of the stick, this is just the Revenge of the Nerd stuff, and this shtick is going to wear thin very soon. And I think some of the people who stood up for Judd Apatow at the time and said, actually, you know, he's not just Boise Revenge of the Nerd stuff, there is more to it, are now starting to go, well, we'd really better start seeing evidence of the more to it pretty soon, because it looks like the same old act to me, and he's made a lot of these movies. And the second thing is, it's a lot less funny than the premise and the poster make out. I mean, it's not awful. It's not awful. I laughed a couple of times. A couple of things made me laugh. Almost all of them Russell Brand. And it's not terrible. In a week in which we have some very terrible stuff out, indeed, you felt quite clean being in the theatre with just a sort of, you know...
So you didn't leave on a tidal wave of vomit?
No,
you
didn't. No, you just...
Which must have been quite a nice way to conclude.
Yeah, well, it was nice because you didn't feel like you need to go and bath in Clorox as a result of it. But it's certainly not brilliantly, outrageously, painfully funny. But I'm going to explain this to James in very physical terms the next time I see him.
Can you buy Clorox in the same as a kind of a two-for-one with Servalan? And then you can just alter ointments.
Do you have an email about the diddly bong?
No, it was a text, actually. It says, I'm now late for work as I stayed in for Mark's review. Thank you. That's from Diddly Bong of the Diddly Do Daily.
Very good.
Who's just started. Anyway, this from Ian in Chorley. I have to completely disagree with your previous email. The Assassination of Jesse James by Coward Bob Ford is the best film I've seen in the last 12 months, and was utterly absorbing. It looks gorgeous. Every character perfectly rounded and performed with subtlety and depth by everyone. It's a perfect length, and despite being a Western, full of themes that are relevant today. I wouldn't have seen this if not for The Good Doctor, and it's a magnificent film. Thank you very much. Mike Good. In Chicago, the train robbery in The Assassination of Jesse James and Bob Ford was the most visually amazing scene in a movie I've seen since that incredible car in reverse scene in Children of Men. That alone made the movie worth seeing. Very slow, though, says Mike.
I don't think it is slow, but, you know, but I'm glad you like the train robbery bit.
And Commodian, Rob Bridgewater in Starport on Seven. Could have confused a stupid person.
Starport in Seven in Bridgewater.
To take the opposite... Commodian, to take the opposite stance to any other critic. Well, certainly the opposite to your man there. Very enthusiastic
James.
Man.
Yeah, but he's just young. Because he is only 17 anyway.
So, okay. So Forgetting Sarah Marshall is moving. It's sounding to me as though it's going to be the movie of the week.
No, but it's not going to.
It's not going to be. So let's move on.
I'm just going to belt through two things. We're not going to do a clip of The Eye because we haven't got time. We've got 4 minutes. So The Eye basically is the latest westernised version of an Eastern movie. There's this company, Vertigo Films, which is Roy Davison and Doug Lee. And what they did was they just optioned a bunch of stuff like The Ring and Grudge and Infernal Affairs, which is the Martin Scorsese movie, The Departed. They sort of brokered the deals between the Eastern filmmakers and the Hollywood remakes. And this is yet another one. There's the Pang Brothers original, which I'm sure lots of people will be familiar with. Oh, you're obviously familiar with the work of Danny and Oxide Pang.
Good. Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
And their original version of The Eye was... I mean, the thing with The Eye is it's a very, very old story. So in this version, Jessica Alba, she's a violinist. Actually, she plays a violinist quite convincingly. I think she might actually play the violin because the fingering that she does in the violin, she doesn't mind playing...
We spoke to her about it.
And?
When I say we, that means I.
Yeah.
Spoke to her. And I think she
did play the violin.
She spent some time learning the violin and she spent some time learning to be blind.
Well, it paid off because she's perfectly fine. She's perfectly fine. I know some people are sniffy about her, but I've been sniffy about her in the past, but no, she's perfectly fine. Anyway, the story is she's a blind woman. She gets given somebody else's eyes, and then she can start seeing things, but like she sees dead people and blah, blah, blah. So this is a very, very old idea. If you've seen Eyes of Laura Mars, if you've seen Hands of Orlack, if you've seen Blink, if you ever listened to Gary Gilmore's Eyes by, what's that band, The Adverts?
The Adverts,
you know,
very good.
It's that
good
story. It's, yes, it is, but it's that story. And in the original, it was visually stylish enough and done with a degree of sort of, you know, stylish edginess that did make it quite scary. This is directed by the people that made Them, which I thought was actually not bad, you know, stripped down home invasion.
So this is from Them?
It is from Them, yep. Yes, from Them to Them. And it's Goodnight from Him and Goodnight from Them. But it's just not scary enough. It's just tab A into slot B. It's not scary enough. It's a very, very sort of perfunctory remake, which leads me on to this very quickly, is Persepolis. Persepolis is clearly the movie of the week, which is Marjane Satrapi co-directs an adaptation of her own graphic novel, which is a semi-autobiographical novel about a young girl growing up in Iran and Europe, suffering under various tyrannies of male rule and, you know, political repression. In the meantime, discovering, you know, all the joys of being a young girl and being rebellious and listening to The Eye of the Tiger and liking Jackie Chan and Kung Fu movies. And it's very dark subject matter, and yet it's done with a great lightness of tone, and it's funny and witty and engaging and intelligent. It's beautifully drawn. It's black and white for most of the movie, and it's got very, very... Now, when I saw it, I saw it in Cannes, and I saw it in French. It's now been redubbed with people like Sean Penn. And I understand the process of the redubbing in that, you know, it's going to open up to a wider audience. It's a 12 certificate movie, so you could perhaps argue that there are people around about that age who wouldn't want to be reading the thing. Personally, I preferred the original version. I have no problem with subtitles. I know that not everybody likes to read, and I do understand, you know, dubbing animated movies. It's a regular occurrence. But Persepolis is really lovely. It's really charming. It's really fresh. It's really inventive, and it's beautifully done. And it really does take the graphic novel, put it up there on screen, does so in a way that is in no way preachy. France put it forward as their contestant for the best foreign language film Oscar, and it didn't get nominated, but it did get nominated in the animated film category, and it got beaten by Ratatouille, which of course is silly because it's clearly a better film than Ratatouille.
Martin says, Simon and Sprout Boy, Mark made the comment that Three and Out is about as funny as root canal work. Well, root canal work is very funny when I do it, because I tell people rude jokes or I play them the podcast.
Is he a dentist?
He is a dentist, yeah.
Really?
And might the adjective commodian enter the dictionary? Could we openly discuss as to its definition, being in possession of an implausible hairstyle, amusingly curmudgeonly, obsessed with The Exorcist? All of those will do.
Oh, I didn't mention The Exorcist.
Well done.
The Exorcist.
Thank you. The podcast is available. You can go to the website. All the details are there. You can get it from iTunes. Mark, it's been fantastic to have you back. Never go away.
Did you miss me?
Very, very much indeed.
You didn't get me on Popmaster, and that I'm really cross about.
Next time, eh? Yeah. Movie of the week, then, is Persepolis. Yes, have a...
Persepolis.
How very Lucanian.
Call the whole thing off.
It's time ago.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.